I am Plante on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. Rich Atmosphere, the music of Merchant Ivory Films, is a new short film that's available for streaming. It's from the filmmaker Stephen Soucy, who joins me now to talk about this work that celebrates the music of Richard Robbins, the longtime collaborator of Ismail Merchant, James Ivory, and Ruth Prower Jabvala on such films as A Room with a View, Morris, Howard's End, The Remains of the Day, and many more. Mr. Robbins, who died in 2012, earned 2 Academy Award nominations for his scores to Howard's End and The Remains of the Day. He scored every Merchant Ivory picture from The Europeans in 1979 through to The White Countess in 2005. The short is narrated by James Ivory, who is also the Oscar-winning screenwriter of Call Me By Your Name, and features illustrations by Jack Cunningham of Nexus Studios in London, England. Mr. Soucy joined me from Los Angeles, California 3 weeks ago to talk about this short, his upcoming feature documentary, Merchant Ivory, which features an all-star cast, as well as what Merchant Ivory films have meant to him. Stephen Soucy is a producer and filmmaker who has been in the midst of producing Romy and Michelle, the musical. He has produced stage versions of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, and the recent Broadway revival of The Boys and the Band. Visit StephenSoucy.com for more information. Please welcome to the Plante on the Line program, Stephen Soucy. Mr. Soucy, good morning.
Hi, how are you, Jeff?
Pretty good yourself.
Good, thanks.
What I enjoyed about this short is the illustrations, the animation, evoke these memorable scenes in these Merchant Ivory movies that we all know, that we all love, that we've all admired over the years, remind us of them, even though they aren't the actual scenes themselves. I mean, what are the conversations that you and Jack Cunningham have in terms of what these illustrations should depict in terms of the scenes themselves or the work themselves?
So Jack was my animator, and he's based in London. And just to maybe back up a little bit, you know, to give a little context, I had interviewed James Ivory twice.
Uh-huh.
to secure the narration for that 5-minute short animated film, you know, where he's talking about the music in Merchant Ivory Films.
Mm-hmm.
And how he worked with his longtime composer Richard Robbins. And when I saw the footage that I got of Jim, I mean, it was just this boring talking head footage, and so I came up with the idea to turn the film into an animated film. And I knew Jack's animation work, and I approached him. And basically how it worked was I described to Jack what I was looking for, right?
Uh-huh.
So I edited the 5-minute narration piece first, and then literally kind of went scene by scene and described what I was hoping to see. And then Jack, of course, with his, you know, creativity, he added his own spin and his own kind of like his own take on what was being said by James Ivory, and that's how the film was developed.
And then what conversations would you and Cunningham have about Richard Robbins' music itself? I mean, because you get a real sense of the importance of the music in Merchant Ivory movies.
Yeah.
How do you bring that to your film, say?
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot about Merchant Ivory, and I was a huge fan of Dick Robbins' music. I mean, really, I mean, I love the Merchant Ivory films, but the music, you know, stays with you, and so there were certain tracks or pieces of different tracks that I knew I wanted to showcase in the film. So I chose those particular pieces of music and added that to the kind of narration part first. And so really I was kind of educating Jack, who's much younger than I am, on these pieces of music and where they might go in the film. Like I said, kind of what I wanted to see, you know. So for example, there's this scene of Helena Bonham Carter and Julian Sands, you know, kissing in the barley in Italy, from the film A Room with a View.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of showing that clip or that scene, which, you know, by the way, you have to get permission to actually use.
Right.
I had Jack draw, animate that kiss in the barley from A Room with a View, which is a really kind of iconic scene if you know that film. And so that particular piece of music was playing in the film, and so I took that slice of music and then Jack drew what he drew, which again is inspired by the scene from the film.
The Merchant Ivory, of course, that name evokes the memory for a lot of people of these marvelous movies. From I guess their collaboration started in the 60s right through to the early 2000s. It involved Ismail Merchant, James Ivory, Ruth Prower Javala, the screenwriter. And then for a lot of people, Richard Robbins, his work was integral to what was a Merchant Ivory film, right?
Yes, 100%. And I mean, and I always felt that Richard Robbins really, he was such an important piece of that filmmaking group. And, like you said, and I felt like he never really got the attention, that he deserved. I mean, he was nominated for 2 Academy Awards. He was nominated for Howard's End, the score for Howard's End, and the score for The Remains of the Day. So that's an amazing, accomplishment. But, he was kind of in the background, and really the 3 who you mentioned, James Ivory, Ismail Merchant, and Ruth Javala, they were really kind of the triumvirate or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, they really were the ones that got a lot of the attention. But yeah, and I mean, and Dick Robbins is kind of always on the side. But if you talk to people who love their films, often what they'll say is, it's the music that really lasts, and it's the music that they never, forget. So for a lot of people, the music really made, and James Ivory does say, he says in my, in the short film that you saw and in the feature documentary film that I'm editing now, I mean, Jim says that they worked together for, over 25, 30 years, and Jim says it couldn't be a Merchant Ivory film without Richard Robbins' score.
How did they start working with? How did Robbins fall into this group? Say, I mean, what were his contributions? You mentioned the 2 Oscar nominations. Even if you think of A Room with a View, for example, which I think for a lot of people the only music that they really remember is the operatic piece, which I've now forgotten the name of. He chose that, right?
He did, right. And that was a real surprise for Jim. James Ivory says he never could have imagined using, an operatic piece as background music in a film. So again, Richard Robbins was, when they met, and I believe they met around 1977 in New York City, Richard Robbins ran a music school in New York City, which was called the Manus College of Music, I believe.
Uh-huh.
And Ruth Havala's daughter, Fia Rosa, was taking piano lessons at that school with Dick Robbins. And at some point, Ismail Merchant met Richard Robbins, and that's kind of how it started. And so Richard Robbins was introduced to James Ivory, and the first Merchant Ivory film he worked on, where he did just choose the source music, was the European. And then from that period on, Richard Robbins was the composer. He either chose the source music or he composed, obviously his own pieces for every film all the way until the last film he did was The White Countess.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, he had Parkinson's disease at the end, and he started the score of The City of Your Final Destination, which was Merchant Ivory's final film, but he couldn't finish it. He was too far gone at that point. And so that film was scored by someone else. But again, just there's nothing like this, you know, that kind of relationship, you know, Dick Robbins, James Ivory working together, you know, I mean, there are just very few examples of it, you know, like David Lynch is somebody who's worked with the, you know, the same composer over and over and over again. So there are, you know, a few examples of it, but just very, very few. And again, the reason why I started this whole Merchant Ivory journey is because I really felt like there was nothing in cinema history like Merchant Ivory. I mean, they had nearly a 50-year relationship with Ismail as producer, James Ivory as director, and Ruth Habala almost always as screenwriter.
And then the ironic thing of the four of them, Robbins was the youngest, wasn't he?
He was. Yes, he was. That's right.
And Ivory, but was Ivory the oldest?
Yes. And he is still, you know, James Ivory is 93 years old, and he really doesn't have, I mean, you know, you see him or you meet him, and he doesn't seem to be slowing down, which is just, you know, amazing to be at that age and to be working. I mean, he's still working.
Indeed. Yeah, we a lot of us saw him last, I guess, the Oscars a couple of years ago. When he won for Call Me By Your Name, the screenplay for Call Me By Your Name. You've seen him in the years since, and he's still going strong, as you mentioned. What is he like to talk to? I mean, we obviously hear his voice in the short, but I mean, as a filmmaker yourself, as a producer yourself, I mean, you obviously can't interact with him without learning something, can you?
Yeah, that's exactly true. I mean, you know, and he's so proud of the work that they accomplished and that kind of like long term, you know, very loyal, you know, relationship that they all had with, you know, one another. And they weren't only, you know, connected in their professional, you know, in the professional realm. They were, I mean, they basically all lived together. Mm-hmm. You know, so when they weren't shooting films, they were still together, either, you know, because Ismail, Jim, and Ruth all lived in the same building in New York City, which I believe is on East 53rd. And then James Ivory has a home in upstate New York in Claverack, New York. And they all used to kind of, be there in the summers or, you know, as many weekends as they could. So, talking and having the opportunity to, you know, speak with Jim has just been, you know, phenomenal. I mean, he's just an incredible, kind of mentor to me at this point. And, mm-hmm. and I mean, his knowledge, you know, his film knowledge, the, you know, and his stories. And, you know, a lot of what I have now, you know, interviews that I've secured from my feature documentary film, you know, he grounds things so nicely. And yeah, so just amazing to, you know, to be able to, you know, speak with him.
And from what I've read of him, and I obviously hear this in your short, he's very generous with his with telling his stories, the experiences he's had as a filmmaker, as a person, as an artist. Say, it's unlike any other sort of filmmaker that one would ever encounter. Just how generous he is, with not only with his time but with his insights. Say.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more. I mean, that's exactly, you know, the way it is. I mean, you know, the timing of my film. I mean, I'm working on, you know, as I said, I'm working on the edit now. I think I've probably got another 5 or 6 weeks, maybe a little bit longer to go. But the timing of my finishing the film and, you know, hopefully finding a distributor for the film, James Ivory is he's written his. He's written his memoirs, and so that book is supposed to come out in early spring. So I think we might see kind of another period for James Ivory where he gets a lot of, you know, a lot of publicity. You know, but you're right. I mean, he does. He tells his stories. He shares everything. And there's, you know, not everything will be in my film. I mean, they did have a lot of personal ups and downs. I mean, I allude to a lot of that, but, you know, they had a very kind of complicated, you know, kind of social scene when they weren't making films. I mean, a lot of people know that James Ivory and Ismail Merchant, you know, were partners both with, you know, in film, but then, you know, in their personal lives, they were partners as well, you know. And so that's something that James Ivory, you know, talks a little bit about. But it was a complicated, you know, I mean, Richard Robbins was a part of that relationship too, in his own way.
Yeah.
So again, it kind of blurred the lines between the professional and the personal.
Do you remember, Stephen, the first Merchant Ivory film that you saw, say?
Yes, it was A Room of the View.
Mm.
Yeah, and I was in high school. I was either in 9th, 10th, you know, somewhere around there, 9th, 10th grade. You know, I lived in upstate New York. I didn't know at the time that I lived, you know, about 45 minutes north of where James and, you know, Isma lived when they were in Claverack. And I just remember being really so, you know, it spoke to me and, you know, it moved me. And you know, there's something about that kind of, you know, deaf storytelling and the music and kind of all the pieces that make a Merchant Ivory film a Merchant Ivory film, right? You know,
yeah.
The costume design. I mean, you really are just kind of like thrown into this world, you know, and surrounded by it. And I just remember playing, like showing the movie to like other people I knew. So even, you know, as a young guy, you know, who knew he wanted to get into film, that particular film, you know, along with other things, but that's something that turned me on to them. And then after that, I mean, Morris was a key film, you know, for me being, you know, a gay man, and you know, so that film actually helped me, you know, to be able to come out. So I mean, there's just an example of what Merchant Ivory, you know, was able to do, you know, with their films. And then, you know, and then I was really blown away by the film Howard Zinn, which came out in 1991.
Right.
And yeah, and so, you know, they've just kind of always been, you know, and I followed them. I mean, I just, you know, I definitely saw every single film that they came out with. And in their later years, as you know, I mean, after Remains of the Day, that was kind of the, you know, the pinnacle for them. And then from there, you know, they did Jefferson in Paris. They did A Soldier's Daughter Never Cries. And, you know, they never really kind of attained that level again, but they certainly weren't afraid to try new things and, you know, kind of tackle new and different stories.
I guess in terms of the grosses, was the biggest film The Remains of the Day?
Gross-wise, no. Surprisingly, that was Le Divorce.
Oh.
But I think that's only because it had kind of the backing and the push of a studio. You know, Remains of the Day did too, but you know, Remains of the Day came out. That in any kind of normal year, that film probably would have swept the Oscars with that film.
Yeah.
But they were up against Schindler's List that year.
Right.
Schindler's List took it all. But really, I mean, Remains of the Day with Anthony Hopkins and Emma Thompson in those two roles. I mean, that was really, they just hit their peak with that.
It's one of those movies that I see on TCM from time to time, and no matter what part of the movie it is, I'll stop and I'll look in and I'll be like, well, I'm just going to watch a few minutes, and then end up, you know, sitting there to the end, because there's just so many things, you know, there's just so many things that you see it for the first time even, and I'm sure that's the same with you as a fan, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I got to say, you know, all the interviews that I got for my feature film, I mean, I interviewed Emma Thompson. I interviewed, you know, Helena Bonham Carter, Hugh Grant. I mean, a lot of the actors that I interviewed say just what you said. They can still watch those movies and see things as an audience that they didn't see the first, second, or third, or fourth time. I mean, and I think that really is one of the reasons why I would love to see Merchant Ivory films kind of just be more, you know, appreciated.
Yeah.
You know, because I think what you said is true. And you know, and the other thing I'd say too, which is really nice, is there's a company called Cohen Media Group, which is based in New York City, and they own 30 Merchant Ivory films, which is probably about 70% of that Merchant Ivory library. And they have been restoring and re-releasing Merchant Ivory titles. And, I mean, I'm hoping with my film, I mean, Cohen Media is just obviously a natural home for my feature documentary film.
Yeah.
You know, so, but it's been great to see, like, Howard Zinn restored, Morris restored, you know, some of these, and then some other lesser known films like Quartet, which was out in the early 80s that starred Maggie Smith.
I saw the I don't know what you call it, the preview, I guess, of your documentary on your website or somewhere, and you seem to have interviewed everybody, or everybody that's alive at least. Were there some people that you wanted to get for this documentary that you didn't?
God, that's a great question. Yes, I wanted to get Anthony Hopkins, mm-hmm. and I wanted to get Nick Nolte, because Nick Nolte was in both Jefferson in Paris, playing Thomas Jefferson in that film, and then he was in the Golden Bowl, and he played the main role there opposite Uma Thurman.
Uh-huh.
And so I'd say those two were on my list, and I wasn't able to get them. You know, Anthony, and you know, Emma Thompson said when I met with her, because I asked her at the end of the interview if she would help me reach Anthony Hopkins,
right.
And she sent him an email, and you know, he didn't really want anything to do with it. And she said to me, she said, you know, I don't think Tony is somebody who really wants to kind of sit there and talk about, you know, his past experiences with Merchant Ivory. And he did have kind of a rough end with Merchant Ivory. He was in their final film, The City of Your Final Destination, which was kind of a mess, like kind of a hot mess film.
Uh-huh.
For various reasons, you know, Ismail had passed and there really wasn't anyone there to do what Ismail did. And, you know, and Anthony Hopkins, you know, sued them at the end. And so it did get a little messy, and yeah, so he wasn't interested, but you know what, I had a total of, I think I interviewed altogether like 42 different people, including James Ivory, who I interviewed maybe five times, you know, so you know, people like Vanessa Redgrave, she's in it, you know, and I mentioned Hugh Grant, James Wilby, who was in Morris,
yeah.
Rupert Graves, who was in A Room of the View in Morris. So, yeah, so some great people, and I'm just excited to, you know, to be wrapping this up, because it really has been about a, you know, from working on the short animated film to all the way through to finishing this feature documentary film. This is probably about a four-year journey for me.
Yeah, the, as I said, it's a very short clip that I saw of your interviews with these people, and it's not only in their words that you capture what it was like to work with Merchant Ivory, but you see it on their faces, and I mean that's a testament to you as a filmmaker, just how many lovely memories they must have of their experience or their reverence, say, for Merchant Ivory themselves.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, you know, I think Emma Thompson says in her interview, you know, just like you encounter the books at the right time and, you know, people at the right time. For her, that period where she was in Howard's End and Remains of the Day, that was their time. And, I mean, she appreciates what that was. And, you know, she hit them kind of on this, you know, when they were really at the top of their game. But, you know, and I think there's, like, you're right. I mean, there's kind of reverence there. There's... She, you know, everybody is just kind of in awe with what Jim and Ismail were able to do. And if you ask Jim, I mean, Jim really wants to give the lion's share of the credit to Ismail, because time and time again, film after film, it was so fraught with, you know, budget issues,
yeah.
Just kind of reaching. And one of the things that I really kind of want to showcase was that they finished every single film. Every single film that they, you know, that they started, they brought it all the way to the finish line every time. And, I mean, I don't think you can talk to, you know, a lot of filmmakers where that's actually, you know, the case.
Right. So in the past week or so, the film version of The Boys in the Band it was released on Netflix. Mm-hmm. I understand you produced the Broadway revival, which a lot of the cast, I guess most of the, or all of the cast are from. Were you involved in that film, say?
No, I wasn't. So as one of the kind of lower level Broadway, you know, producers on that film, or on that show, or that, you know, revival,
mm-hmm.
It was only kind of the top tier, you know, the top two producers, Ryan Murphy and, you know, another producer on there as well. Yeah, so they were the ones. And, you know, it's just like when, you know, Hamilton, the film, came out, it wasn't the whole kind of slew of producers that were involved. It was just, you know, kind of like the top three. Nope, so I wasn't involved with that. But, you know, I'm also involved, you know, with Romy and Michelle, the musical. So if there is a film version of that, that's something that I would definitely be a part of, because I'm one of the lead producers on that show.
Yeah, you've shepherded that for a number of years now, haven't you?
I have, yeah. Oh. This is another one of my passion projects. I got involved with Romy and Michelle, the musical, based on that kind of iconic film, Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion. And, I've been involved with that for over 5 years now. And my producing partner on that is Barry Kemp. And he was one of the executive producers of the film. And I've worked with him for the last 5 years on that. And, you know, we were all set to open off Broadway this fall, like right now. And, you know, obviously just everything's on hold. So we'll have to see what our, you know, like the timing for our trajectory is to be determined.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those frustrating things about this time, I guess, is that a lot of theater, and I've seen clips of the musical, you know, like The Table Read, for example, which is on your site. And it just seems like a solid musical. It's a shame that it's not out now, you know?
Yeah, no, it's one of those musicals that's going to really be a feel-good, really funny, you know, kind of quirky. But I think in a very good way. And it's just, you know, it is. It's frustrating. But I will say one of the advantages, or just, you know, kind of an unforeseen thing, is I didn't think I would be delving this deep into the edit. I mean, I've been editing my film now for nearly 6 months, and I didn't think I would be, well, I definitely wouldn't have been able to devote the amount of time and move as fast as I've moved if Romy and Michelle was still in the mix.
Right.
So I will say what's great is, you know, probably by the end of November, I'm going to be finished with my Merchant Ivory film. And that's going to be great. And then whenever Broadway opens again, I can get back on the Romy and Michelle train, I guess.
Indeed. Stephen, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Congratulations on this short. I enjoyed it a great deal, and I'm looking forward to your documentary.
Well, thank you so much, Joe, and thanks for having me on the show.
The website for more is at stephensusi.com. Stephen Susi's film, Rich Atmosphere, The Music of Merchant Ivory Films, is available now for streaming. He joined me from Los Angeles, California. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Planta.